where did you come from in terms of your interest in science?
I came from a polymer chemistry background, organic chemistry. Currently, I'm a molecular biochemist. I look at what happens inside the cells and outside of the cells, and I'm using glyphosate as a model to tell us what's actually happening with our mitochondria and how our mitochondria are being affected and influenced by xenobiotics. So that's what I'm doing. I'm working on a couple of papers right now, both glyphosate papers. One related to how glyphosate affects the fatty acids and mineral profiles of plants, increasing heavy metals, altering the isomers of vitamins in the plants, and then how that affects our biology. Then I'm looking at how glyphosate directly impacts our mitochondria and causes mitochondrial disease.
Yeah, and so how did you first get interested in glyphosate then? You were working with other...
I was involved in a lot of different EPA studies, things that affect public health and the environment. I got involved with with glyphosate many years ago, actually using the product back in the 1970s, just after it came to the market. Back over a decade ago, I contacted the United States Department of Agriculture and the EPA. I wanted to know why they weren't following glyphosate and glufosinate in the food chain. They were following everything else, all kinds of other organophosphates and whatnot, but they weren't following those two herbicides. Nobody seemed to have an answer. And they finally came around, and we had some discussions, and they decided that they would test some soy to see, you know, how much glyphosate was coming into the soy, because soy is a popular feed used in feeding chickens and pigs and other animals. They analyzed 400 samples of soy, and they found them ubiquitously contaminated with glyphosate and HMPA. They weren't going to publish that data. The conversations I had with them, I said, you know, you have the data. We need to know. You should be looking at other things in the food supply. And that's when I started testing the food supply, about the same time I was talking to them. And then I wrote a letter to the Environmental Protection Agency based on my research and told them that that glyphosate was disrupting homeostasis of our gut bacteria. As a matter of fact, all bacteria are affected in some way or another by glyphosate. That's what spawned the first paper that I wrote with Stephanie Seneff. I had already figured out what was happening with glyphosate and our gut. What I didn't reveal in the first paper was what I'm working on now, and that's how glyphosate actually causes malabsorption by disrupting our proteins and our lipids. Over the past 12 years of research, that glyphosate disrupts the digestive enzymes of animals, which include us. I also found that glyphosate also interferes with our bile acid function. And in particular, glyphosate combines with our bile and inhibits our digestive enzyme lipase, and both are needed for the digestion of fats. So this, in turn, directly affects our lipid biochemistry, and our lipid biochemistry controls the function of cells and cell signaling and control the mitochondria. So that, in a nutshell, is what my work is focused on, and how I brought it from my early contacts the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the EPA to where I am today.
And so, yeah, Dr. Seneff, that's she's a senior research scientist at MIT. Does it kind of act like another one of our amino acids? Is that right? Glycine?
Yeah, what Stephanie is talking about is some of my original research that goes back quite a few years. I discovered that glyphosate becomes part of our proteins and part of our lipids, both. Paper number 5 and our paper number 6 go into an explanation of how glyphosate can integrate with proteins because it is an amino acid analog of glycine. There are many analogs of various amino acids, like glutamic acid. Its analog is the herbicide glufosinate. Glufosinate can also attach itself and integrate into peptides and proteins. Glyphosate disrupts digestion by inhibiting our digestive enzymes, like pepsin, trypsin, amylase, and lipase. With lipase, glyphosate irreversibly inhibits lipase. And lipase is necessary to the function of all cells. It's necessary for fat metabolism and the production of our lipids and phospholipids, glycerol lipids, and glycerol proteins. So glyphosate, because it's a synthetic amino acid, and it can incorporate and integrate into proteins and lipids, it can wreak havoc virtually anywhere. It's a synthetic amino acid that was never in biology, and it shouldn't be in any biology. But if we keep ingesting this stuff and exposing ourselves to it, it'll continue to be destructive to biology. Glyphosate is used in over 160 food crops. I have all of Monsanto's studies for all the various crops that glyphosate is used on. Before glyphosate can be used on a crop, they ran tests to determine how much glyphosate would be found in those foods. And that's how they established the minimum values for glyphosate residues in foods. I have all of the studies on tea and coffee and milk, juices, corn, soy, peanuts. I mean, you name it. All those studies exist. They're all trade secret studies. The EPA gave me those studies along with all their animal studies. And I've gone through all of those. And then I myself went through and started analyzing the food supply, looking at wheat and other small grains. Vegetables, fruit juices, wines, beer. I've looked at milk. I've looked at eggs.
And glyphosate's been found in?
All of those. In 1 microgram of glyphosate, there are 3.561 trillion molecules of glyphosate. And every one of those molecules can corrupt a protein or a lipid. They can create peptides. Virtually every meal that Americans eat is contaminated by glyphosate. About 95% of the food supply in this country is contaminated with glyphosate. From each and every meal where you ingest residues of glyphosate, about 1% to 1.5% of the residues of glyphosate wind up in your proteins and in your tissues. It becomes part of you. And when it does, it corrupts those proteins, causes dysfunction in the proteins, dysfunction in the lipids, dysfunction in enzymes, and over time that leads to disease. And that's why glyphosate can cause virtually any disease on the planet. I know we've been criticized for the litany of diseases that we've discussed in the light of glyphosate, but when you look at the disruption of the amino acid glycine and the biological functions and the biochemical function, it's easy to actually create diseases by altering amino acids. We have around 21 canonical amino acids, but we have all kinds of other amino acids in our biology as well. But our canonical amino acids that make up our proteins and our tissue structures, the structural proteins, those are made of the 21 amino acids. But we're exposed to other amino acids that come from nature. Many of them are toxins, members of the phosphonate family, like glyphosate is a phosphonate. Its acute toxicity is like 5,600 milligrams per kilogram in rats. It's considered virtually non-toxic, but that's through acute acute toxicity.
Short term, yeah.
How much cyanide does it take to kill someone? But it's not about acute toxicity. It's about chronic toxicity. It's about altering the function and shape of protein and, you know, the cascade of events that happen from doing that. That's what the diseases are all about, all these misfolded proteins. To give you a classic example, going back to Monsanto's original studies with the rats back around 1981, they discovered that glyphosate caused cataracts. And we know today that the proteins of cataracts are the same as the proteins of Alzheimer's disease, the fibrillary tangles and plaques in Alzheimer's disease. Those polymeric molecules are the same as cataracts. And we know that glyphosate induces and causes cataract based on Monsanto's own research.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of this comes down to we're eating something that's becoming integrated into us that's really leading to interference of natural things that would happen if we were eating actual food items, you know, things that are growing in the ground, real, you know, living things, which is what we want to eat. We get these nutrient deficiencies.
Interesting that you bring up nutrient deficiencies, because glyphosate originally was used as a chelator for cleaning out pipes of steam boilers. And it was Monsanto that later discovered that it was a good herbicide. Mm. But I mentioned in the beginning of our discussion that I'm working on a paper that looks at how glyphosate alters the minerals and fatty acids and vitamin profiles of plants. I did, back in 2013 to 2016, for 3 years, I did field tests and lab work looking at genetically engineered corn and heirloom varieties of corn, non-genetically engineered corn. And I looked at 50 different varieties grown in the same field, under the same conditions, same soil, no micronutrients added, no fertilizers added. I just grew all these varieties. And most of the varieties were genetically engineered that I grew. They were varieties from Monsanto, DuPont, Dow, Syngenta. And so I've amassed quite a bit of data on how glyphosate affects the uptake of minerals in the plants, sprayed and non-sprayed, and how glyphosate affects non-genetically engineered resistant corn plants, how it alters the mineral profiles. What I found, and what's going to be in that new paper, is that glyphosate increases the amount of heavy metals that are taken and absorbed into the plants. When you use glyphosate prior to planting of a crop, and glyphosate is in the soil, it doesn't have to be, the plants don't have to be resistant to glyphosate to be grown on soils where glyphosate has been used. Glyphosate kills the weeds, and the residues are low enough so that they function on other plant life more or less as a growth regulator, or affects the mineral uptake of the plant, as I found in my research. And so glyphosate increases the amount of lead and cadmium in our food supply. Cadmium, that's known to cause all kinds of cancers, all kinds of disease. All farmers that are applying glyphosate prior to planting their lettuce or their celery, beans, peas, whatever. Residues of glyphosate are winding up in the crop, and with those residues are a bioaccumulation of toxic metals.
There are a lot of scientists in other countries that are working on looking into the risks of glyphosate. What are some of the other things out there that people have looked at besides the work that you've done? Are there other sort of interesting developments in the risks of glyphosate?
They've looked at glyphosate and chronic kidney disease, non-fatty alcoholic liver disease. There was a study that recently came out where they looked at glyphosate and honey and bees and whatnot. But my work going back even before that, about 5 or 6 years ago, I analyzed the bodies of both dead bees and live bees from hives suspected of chronic colony collapse disorder. And I found glyphosate in the bodies of both the dead and the sick live bees of colonies that the U.S. Department of Agriculture had looked at and analyzed for pesticides. They didn't find any pesticides, but they didn't look for glyphosate. I did, in the same hives that they analyzed, and found glyphosate in the honey, the pollen that the bee bread that honeybees collect in the hive. It was part of their chitinous protein.
You're working on finding these biochemical pathways and how glyphosate's interfering. So who are some scientists, or where could one find some science that would build on or let us know more about the risks of glyphosate?
No scientists around the planet. My work is referenced by a lot of people in a lot of different countries, and over 350 papers that have been published about glyphosate to date have referenced my research. My new research, I know, is going to be referenced even more because no one else is doing this research, as far as I know. No one else is looking at how the metals and fatty acids and vitamin isomers are being changed by glyphosate. As far as I know, I'm the only one that's done that research. There's a group over in England that has been pressuring me to finish up the paper and send it out for review for publication, because it's information that's vital to other researchers. And the work, of course, that I'm doing now with lipids and digestive enzymes, I don't know any other researchers on the planet doing that work. As far as I know, I'm the only one. Funding is a problem. I have to use my own money.
Independent researcher at this point.
I'm an independent researcher. I left Arthur D. Little a number of years ago. I wish I had my lab that I had at ADL. You know, I'm not only looking at glyphosate research, but I also do environmental and public health research for communities across the country, industrial sources and stuff like that. I help citizens find the contaminants, let them know what the contaminants are, so that they can take action.
Well, it's great work that you're doing. If people want to reach out, it's Samsl Environmental and Public Health Services in Deerfield, New Hampshire. And there really needs to be more support for this science. I mean, this is what leads to making good advocacy and making good environmental activism. It needs to be based on real science.
A couple of things that you might be interested in that my research has spawned. The collagens and keratins of our structural proteins, and found that glyphosate becomes part of the 27 or 28 collagens that we have and number of keratins that we have. And that's very, very important research, because when glyphosate becomes part of those proteins, it corrupts those proteins so that the the collagen keratins don't function correctly.
That you were talking about your current research on mitochondria.
Well, our mitochondria are protected by phospholipids, and glyphosate becomes part of the phospholipids. These glycolipids, glyphosate becomes part of the head group and alters the lipid structure and allows for other xenobiotics to get into where the mitochondria are. Free glyphosate and AMPA can get into the mitochondria. And our lipid chemistry is what controls the mitochondrial function. So this is how genes get messed up, switched on, switched off. This is how mitochondrial diseases are created, by altering the fatty acids of our lipids and phospholipids.
And what would be some mitochondrial diseases people might be familiar with?
Oh, there are a ton of mitochondrial diseases. All those are those glycogen diseases. Chronic kidney disease is actually a mitochondrial disease. Heart disease is a mitochondrial disease. COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Asthma, ophthalmic problems, eye diseases. The destruction of our glands and organs. Monsanto found, when they tested glyphosate back in 1981, they found that glyphosate destroyed every gland and organ of biology. Sexual dysfunction is a mitochondrial disease. There are an incredible number of mitochondrial diseases.
Other diseases that's been linked to are like autism and Alzheimer's and type 2 diabetes, depression, celiac disease.
Yeah, I covered all that stuff in papers 1, 2, and 3. But some of my new research actually explains it far better than some of our early papers. I'm looking more at the mitochondrial function and how it's dictated by our lipids.
Yeah, it seems to make so much sense now, the rise in these diseases and the link with this, the rise in the use of this chemical, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds of it being out in our environment and in our foods and directly on our foods, oftentimes, how it's preventing, you know, beneficial things from happening in our bodies and causing interference of things in our bodies.
A number of years ago, I said that we are one biosphere. What affects one affects all. And that you can take to the bank.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll bank on that, and we'll be able to thrive with that idea. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, I'm hoping you get to bank on that stuff too, because it doesn't seem right that someone who's doing important work is having to struggle for exposing things that are risking our health.
Well, somebody has to do it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for all the time. And
well, I'm glad I could answer some of your questions and let you know some of the work that I'm up to. If you have any additional questions, you know where to find me. Just find one of my research papers. My email address is there.
All right. Anywhere you might suggest like average consumers might turn to for information on this topic?
They can go to ResearchGate or academia.edu and just type my name in, Anthony Samsel, and my author's file will pop up and they can read my papers.
And then read papers that are cited by you and find out
and
more.
And read papers that are cited by me. I have my own page at Monsanto.
Uh-huh.
They have a page dedicated to my work. They have to defend their nest egg, and now Bayer has to defend the nest egg.
Right.
It won't be long before glyphosate is completely taken off the market. They're searching for alternatives, but the alternatives are probably going to cause a problem too, because they're not looking at how this stuff functions in biology, how it affects the mitochondria. And until they realize that you can't use these xenobiotics, they're antithetical to life itself. Until they realize that, we're going to continue to have problems.